Space Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Lightyear, Brian and Charles, Good Luck to You, Leo Grand, Spiderhead, and Mad God. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring the 2004 version of Salem's Lot, not Morbius. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news focuses on Patricia Heaton, TV star, best known, of course, for being on Home Improvement. And the news headline should read that Patricia Heaton should pick up a copy of Daily Variety now and then, because she has just this week found out that Tim Allen will not be doing the voice of Buzz Lightyear in the movie Lightyear that's been in development for years and releases this weekend. Anyway, she took to Twitter expressing her concern and outrage over the fact that Tim Allen is not doing the voice of Buzz Lightyear, even though he, of course, originated it in the Toy Story series, and he also was that in the animated film Buzz Lightyear and Star Command that came out. Oh gosh, it was just a Cell animated film done direct-to-video that Pixar and Disney did back in, like, 2000. And some people have questioned that. A lot of people have said, why isn't Tim Allen doing the voice? Is it because of his political views? Because of woke Disney? It's not that. And here's why I know it's definitely not that. If they were not hiring Tim Allen because of political views, why are they hiring him to do a Santa Claus series, which is coming this year on Disney Plus? That doesn't make any sense. Obviously, it's something more than just that. It could be age. I mean, Tim Allen's, is he in the 70s yet? He's an older guy. I mean, he became famous in the 80s, and he's been around for decades, but he hardly headlines movies anymore. Chris Evans, who was Captain America and the largest franchise ever created, is a bit of a name. And for that record, you know, Chris Evans does emulate a quality of Buzz Lightyear that Tim Allen did with a little more level of cheese. And here's the reality, is it's about the character, not the toy. And I'll talk more about the movie later in the show, but the original character that we were introduced as Buzz Lightyear was Tim Allen's version, which is fantastic, and it's wonderful, but it's not the same person as the character they were going for in the movie. And the directors have talked about this in the press. They're like, Tim Allen brings a level of cheesiness to it, which is appropriate for Toy Story, and it works great in those movies, but they were wanting to focus back on a character that the toy was based on. That's not what you necessarily get from Tim Allen, and Tim Allen is not known as that dramatic actor. I mean, Chris Evans has done a variety of things. Tim Allen's a comedian. He cheeses it up. He makes it big. I mean, even if you look at something like Galaxy Quest, which actually has real character moments in it, Tim Allen is still sort of mugging and chumming. He's doing a Shatner version of that character. So, no, that's why Tim Allen wasn't put in that movie. It has nothing to do with his politics and has more to do with star power and the character they were going for, and to further differentiate it from the toy of the Buzz Lightyear property. The next piece of news I want to talk about is Morbin time is back in the news. There's been a new petition started on change.org to release Morbius in theaters for a third time because we were all busy that weekend and that's why we didn't see it when he put it in the theaters the last time. This coming along with the fact that, and I just had somebody send me a screen cap of something the Morbius Movies Twitter account pointed out, that it's the number one movie on Amazon Prime. Now, it's a little bit deceptive because Morbius is not available for free or within the subscription of Prime Video. It is something you got to rent. Now, you got to rent it for $5.99 or you can buy it for $20. So there's enough people that plop down $6 to watch Morbius for its 24-hour or 48-hour rental period. which basically means a bunch of people got together, each kicked in a dollar, and watched Morbius and had a blast, which is exactly what I said they should have done. This is why Sony should have approached either Prime Video or Netflix to get it on their service as soon as possible so people could watch it, and they'll watch the heck out of it to have fun with it and make fun of it, but at least that's numbers counting towards the whole. It's just the fact that no one wants to pay a premium for this movie. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer I want to talk about is for Nope, which is in theaters on July 22nd, in just about a month.
Bro, what'd you see?
Something above the clouds.
That's big.
How big?
Big.
You think whatever killed Pops is out there?
So what happens next?
This could be an opportunity.
I'm talking rich and famous for life.
There's plenty of videos online.
Ain't nobody gonna get what we gonna get.
What we gonna get?
The money shot.
What's up?
Undeniable proof of aliens on camera. The Oprah shot.
I've said this before. I'm a big fan of Jordan Peele's horror work. I mean, his humor's funny. I mean, his comedy stuff's good. But I think his real talent lies in horror and the surreal and that kind of thing. I thought, of course, Get Out was really good, but I really liked Us. I thought Us was much more subversive and had much more to dissect and much more to think about on many different layers than Get Out did, because Get Out was pretty obvious what he was trying to do with that one. I'm real curious to see what happens with Nope, because I know even less about what the focus of the story is than from that original poster. I mean, obviously it's about a potential alien phenomenon, something from the sky, and it's this family trying to, you can get from the trailer, they're trying to get video evidence of it and try to make some money on it. But I don't know anything more than that. I mean, this could almost be Jordan Peele's answer to Signs, which I love Signs, by the way. I know that it's oftentimes maligned because people just love to hate on M. Night Shyamalan. But I thought that that was a really interesting movie. And this one looks like it's got shades of that, but it also looks like it's going in a bunch of weird directions. And what I'm hoping from Nope is what we got from Us, which was not a straightforward, easy to decode horror film. And I'm hoping that Jordan Peele weaves enough stuff in there that it's not obvious what he's doing, so you can have it be a discussion piece, so you can bring out what you interpret, and also you have to know kind of where his focus is and what his views are, and I want something that's not so easy to decode, and I think that's something we're going to be getting with Nope. So I'm looking forward to that one. The next one I want to talk about is Blonde, which is coming to Netflix on September 23rd.
Here. Please come. Don't abandon me.
She's coming.
It's said that those lances go back to their spouses. Diamonds are a girl's best friend.
She's coming. She's almost here.
It's a Marilyn Monroe biopic based on a Joyce Carol Oates. I don't know much about the book, but I understand that it was a lot of artistic license taken with it to get inside Marilyn Monroe's mind. My biggest issue with this is sort of my issue with the upcoming Elvis movie is, what else is there to say? When they did My Week with Marilyn, I was not a fan of that because there was no depth to her character when they really could have. There's something you can really mine from Marilyn Monroe's character, but they're too interested in the iconic nature of it. Now, the thing that I find so interesting about this is the NC-17 rating, because Netflix can put whatever they want to on their service, and they don't have to worry about censors and local standards for what's released in theaters. So this is just the first, I think, step towards maybe doing other things that are NC-17 rated and take that stigma away from that rating. So I'm looking forward to that. Ana de Armas, we'll see. She's cute and she's very attractive and she has a great bubbly personality, but I don't know how good of an actor she is. I'm hoping she does a good job in this, but just because she looks like Marilyn Monroe does not mean that she's going to be a great Marilyn Monroe. We'll see. There's not much given in that teeny tiny snippet of a trailer. Now, next up, I'm going to be talking about Brian and Charles and Mad God coming soon on Fat Guys at the Movies. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and start talking about Brian and Charles. A lonely inventor from Northern Wales creates his own robot, whom he raises as a child and faces bullies in town.
I was very alone.
Ah, fiddlesticks.
That's when I just started making stuff. Any little idea I had, I just made. My new project, I'm building a robot. Didn't look too bad, does he? I wonder what he'll do when I turn him on.
You'd like me to give you a name? Tony?
Charles?
Charles.
Charles?
Charles.
You like that name, do you?
Hello, Brian.
Hello, Charles. It's lovely to meet you.
This is a very British type of movie. Now, it's Welsh. It takes place in Wales, and I don't know if the filmmakers are Welsh. But certain areas of Wales, I mean, yeah, you got Cardiff and you got like big cities and stuff like that. But there's certain areas of Wales that, you know, they're it's sort of like the Highlands of Scotland, you know, they're very remote and they're very tight knit and they're small communities. A lot of these areas of the UK that are remote, they're sort of like the United Kingdom version of Appalachia here, where you've got a lot of people live in the woods and they're very tight knit community, very small, and they take care of their own, and they also have their own battles, but they fight their own battles. And so it is a rural setting. Now, the character of Brian is this weird guy. I mean, he's very smart, but he's completely socially awkward. He lives alone on this farm, and he invents ridiculous things. He tried to invent a flying cuckoo clock so that anybody could look up in the sky and see what time it was. And so he builds this robot out of like an old washing machine and a mannequin's head, and he put it together. They don't explain the science behind it, and that, because that's unimportant. And eventually it comes to life, and it gains sentience, and he names it Charles because that's the name that it likes. And it's the story of the two of them. And it's, I mean, it's very obvious what they're doing with this. They're making it an allegory to a parent, like with a child, because at the beginning, Charles starts off as basically a child. He's all excited, and Brian is his entire world. He does whatever he says, and then he kind of goes through this adolescence where he starts to get mouthy, and he gets to be a bit rebellious, and he doesn't always listen to Brian, and Brian has to deal with basically the teenager at home. And I mean, I've raised kids, so, you know, I totally see all that happening. And it's, you know, not very well veiled, but it is very poignant at times because there's a real sweetness between these two characters, even though it's a weird looking guy and a robot. And the robot, when I say robot, I mean, it is not like R2-D2 or C-3PO. It's not a clever, loving robot that you'd see in a science fiction movie. It looks like a pile of garbage. But there's a charm to it and a sweetness, and there really is this wonderful little chemistry between the two of them. I mean, this is a charming allegory of everything from friendship to parenting with a tender heart. It is a wonderful little movie. It's weird and it's quirky, and it does get dark at times because there are these local bullies, this family who lives nearby, and, you know, they bully the entire town. They're just a bunch of a-holes, basically. And we all know those people. Some of you out there might be those people. If you don't know those people, you might want to look at yourself and say, maybe I'm the a-hole on the block. But they've been pushing Brian around forever. But, of course, they're crossing a line when they start meddling with Charles. Because Charles, he's naive. He's this brand new being, and it's kind of eye-opening and as weird as Brian as you get behind him. And you really start to fall in love with him, and you fall in love with the relationship he has with Charles. It's strange, and it's quirky, and it's bizarre. And like I said, very, very British or Welsh, even. It's not for everybody, but I had a lot of fun watching it. I kind of fell in love with this movie. So I'm going to say that Brian and Charles totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is Mad God. Special effects wizard Phil Tippett directs the story of a being descending in the levels of the apocalypse, facing insane creatures and torturous situations. Trailer has no dialogue to it. The movie does not have any dialogue to it, as you can tell. It's a lot of noises, and I wanted to play as much as I could in the trailer. I wanted to give you that full trailer because along with it not having the dialogue, it has voices and noises, and you don't just hear the industrial and the noises of things, and you don't hear the squelching. You hear the animal voices and the subhuman voices that are in this movie. This is a strange film. I mean, it's an unrelenting 90 minutes of pure nightmare fuel. And I kind of loved it. Because it is everything that you'd want to see in a dark, twisted look at what could be the future of humanity and the Earth. And I gotta say, this took me by surprise. Because Phil Tippett, you know, I have great respect for Phil Tippett. I mean, I grew up with his movies. A lot of people will point to Jurassic Park. Well, Jurassic Park was one of his last big movies because he's a stop motion guy. This is the guy who did the Rancor monster effects in Return of the Jedi. He was the go-to guy for miniature and stop motion effects, which were in those first three Star Wars movies. And it wasn't until Dennis Muren came in as a conduit to eventually usher in CGI in Jurassic Park. Because if you don't know the history of Jurassic Park, the original movie, Spielberg originally had Tippett in mind to do the dinosaur effects. And then Dennis Muren came to him and said, hey, look at some of these tests I did in the computer. And Spielberg pivoted to that. But he didn't just abandon Tippett. He brought Tippett in as a movement consultant and as somebody to help develop the dinosaur effects, because in order to be a master of stop motion, you know, somebody who was my generation's Ray Harryhausen, you need to understand the movement of creatures and animals. So even though Dennis Muren could make a T-Rex look like a T-Rex, it was Phil Tippett's understanding of musculature and movement and biophysics that really made it work. So I've been a fan of his work, and it's sad to have seen stop motion fall apart. Even though CGI works, I do love seeing people go back to stop motion stuff. And this is something he started making this like 20 years ago. And then he was like, well, CGI is taking it over. But over the years, you know, he just kind of threw it together and eventually put together this absolute fever dream of industrial nightmareness. And it's got some very disturbing imagery. It's got some very dark things going on. It's available on Shudder right now, and it is playing in limited release. It reminds me a little bit of that movie Nine. Although Nine, when they made the movie of Nine, they lost a lot of the weirdness of it because they gave too much characterization to it. But if you go to the original stop motion short film Nine, which was made like, oh gosh, by now, like 20 years ago, that's what this reminds me of, you know, just a bizarre world. And it's beautiful to watch, and it's fascinating, and it has all these different layers. Makes no sense whatsoever, but that's part of the charm of the whole thing. So I'm going to have to say Mad God totally rocks as well. Check it out.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Next up on Fat Guys and the Movies, we're going to be talking about the new films Lightyear and Spiderhead. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the big movie of the weekend, the one that's probably going to knock off Jurassic World out of its top spot. And that is Lightyear. The original story of Buzz Lightyear and the Space Rangers finds Buzz trying to save a group of stranded colonists on a hostile planet.
Buzz Lightyear to Star Command.
Come in, Star Command.
Why don't they answer?
Hey!
Shh! The robots!
The what? What is happening right now?
Alicia?
Oh, no. That's my grandmother.
But, Socks, how long were we gone?
Meow, 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 meow. 62 years, 7 months, and 5 days.
What?
I hope you're ready for action, because all we needed was a pilot.
For what?
To destroy the alien ship.
Everyone's so confused about what this is. This is not about the toy, okay? I mean, so many people are like, is it a Toy Story? It's not really. What it is it's, they have an opening title thing that says, in 1995, Andy got a toy for Buzz Lightyear based on his favorite movie. This is that movie. So essentially, this is Star Wars. And Toy Story's about the Star Wars figures. This is Andy's version of Star Wars. So it's meant to be this self-contained story of Buzz Lightyear and the Space Rangers. And I gotta say, you know, if I were a kid, if I were a 10-year-old Kevin Carr, if I had seen this movie, I would have lost my freaking mind. This would have been Star Wars all over again. It is exciting. It's fun. It's got all the excitement and punch of a space adventure. But it's about Buzz Lightyear. So it's a movie about this space ranger, and it's the story of him originally on this piloting this mission. They get stranded on this world. And he's trying to find basically a propulsion system. He's trying to refine a propulsion system to get him off this planet and back to Earth. And every time he goes on the mission, it loops time ahead, you know, a whole bunch of years. And so everyone else is getting older and developing, and people are settling down while he just doesn't age. And it's the story of him trying to find a way to save these people. So buried in this sci-fi spectacular movie is a lot of heart. Now, it doesn't have the impact of Pixar's Best, but it is a fantastic space adventure with a lot of heart and sweetness woven into the story. I mean, it's not like one of these things like Up or Inside Out, where it's these very tender, wonderful moments of reality of what, you know, when you're, you know, the four Toy Story movies, in particular, first three Toy Story movies work because you can see what it's like as the kid playing with the toys. And something like Inside Out, as out there as that movie is, it's still just about the development of teenage emotions. And a movie like Up, again, as bizarre as that movie is, it's about love and regret and loss, especially late in life. And Lightyear has those tender moments. Now, it's not as hardwired into the movie because the purpose of the movie is the space adventure, but they put a really sweet story along with it. Especially when, you know, it's framed with the fact that everyone's aging faster than Buzz, and the people that he knows and his relationships with people over the years as they come and go, and how he kind of jumps through all that. So there's certainly a lot of Pixar sweetness and heart to this movie. It's not missing. But, you know, like I said, this is not a movie about growing up. It's not a movie that's about that. It's a movie about family and friends and finding your purpose. And maybe your purpose might just be staring at you in the face all along while you're thinking and trying to do something else. I mean, there's a lot to bring out of Lightyear, but it's also just a great little action movie. And of course, it looks brilliant. It is funny that it's supposed to be a movie that came out in 1995. The special effects in this 1995 movies are fantastic, let me tell you. But, I mean, it has all that space adventure stuff. It has the good guys and the bad guys and laser guns and rocket ships and weaponry. But it also has all these elements that make Pixar movies great. Like, it has the ragtag group of helpers, like the friends, the ragtag team that Buzz Lightyear works with to eventually achieve his goals. And that's what makes it a fun movie. So I'm going to have to say Lightyear is a lot of fun. It's great, especially for kids. And there's, like any Pixar movie, plenty in there for the parents to get as well. So Lightyear totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Spiderhead. Chris Hemsworth plays a pharmaceutical developer who tests mood-altering cocktails on prison inmates.
Your presence in this facility, while technically a punishment, is a privilege.
Where have you been?
Drug study.
In science, we have to explore the unknown.
They've been testing me up and down. A lot weirder stuff than usual.
This is new frontier stuff here.
Before we begin, I need your permission to administer Danforte.
This place can really mess with your head.
Drip on.
Acknowledge.
Drip on.
Acknowledge.
I didn't know anything about this movie. I actually thought it was a spy movie when I first got the screener of it. And then I started watching. That's what thing I love doing. I love just turning on a movie, knowing nothing about it, and going wherever the movie takes me. And sometimes I'm way off about what I think the movie is. Now, this is directed by Joe Kaczynski, who did Top Gun Maverick. So he's coming right off of Top Gun, but he's doing something very, very different. And it's not Top Gun. It's not Oblivion. It's not Tron Legacy. I mean, it's a science fiction movie, but it's more speculative fiction. It's based on a short story that appeared in The New Yorker and then was collected in an anthology. And I've not read the short story yet. I glanced at a sort of a summary of the short story. And, you know, here's the thing. Adapting the written word is very difficult. Because even though a lot of people think books and movies are very similar, they're not. I mean, books you get into people's heads and I mean, you can do whatever you want to and take people into other people's minds and do whatever you want special effects wise and mess up the chronology all you want. Whereas a movie is a much more practical, visually oriented, pragmatic, rigid format. And the other thing is if you're taking a novel, one of the things novels suffer from is having to cut too much out to make it run that 2-2.5 hours long. Well, when you have a short story, it's the opposite. Sometimes you have to expand it. And it appears to have overdeveloped the initial story, causing the characters to get lost in this haphazard plot. And that's kind of part of the problem. It seems like the story, at least from what I read about the story, is it's much more straightforward and it doesn't get as complicated, but they have to make this stretch to 2 hours. So in this movie, you know, Hemsworth is this guy developing these drugs and he's testing them on these inmates. Miles Teller is one of them. And eventually Miles Teller, his character, doesn't like what's going on and he's feeling manipulated, which he is because he's doing pharmaceutical testing on him. And they're developing these drugs like there's a love drug and a torture drug. And a laughing drug, basically. They have a whole bunch of drugs for different things. If you've ever read the original Philip K. Dick story, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which is what Blade Runner is based on and has nothing to do with Blade Runner, really. If you read the original story, Philip K. Dick plays around with that idea of having drugs that change your mood, not just mood stabilizers like they have in antidepressants now, but stuff that will make you happy or make you sad or make you horny, you know, that kind of thing. And that appears to be what this character is developing, but he's not going about it the most ethical way. The problem is it gets a little bit confusing in how the setup of this is, because it appears that it's just this one or two guys running this, I guess you could call it an honor system type of prison island. And they have these inmates that they're being tested on, but, you know, it's trying to make a statement about whether the inmates deserve it and, you know, at what level do you lose your humanity and how much should you manipulate moods? But, I mean, it doesn't know exactly what it's trying to focus on. And that's why I'm saying I think it took something a little bit more simple in the story that was originally written and expanded it too much in trying to develop some characters and put a love story in there. And it just gets murky. I mean, it's a beautifully shot movie and it's got a great cast. Miles Teller, I could take or leave. But it just feels really imperfect and it kind of misses the mark for me. So I'm going to have to say that Spiderhead, as good as it looks, kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Good Luck to You, Leo Grand, and hitting the Home Cinema Roundup featuring the 2004 version of Salem's Lot. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up with the movie reviews and talk about Good Luck to You, Leo Grand. Emma Thompson stars as a widow who hires an escort to broaden her sexual horizons.
Oh, for quite some time.
For 31 years, my husband would climb on top, do the business, roll off, put his pajamas on and go back to sleep.
What
about you, the real you.
I'm whatever you want me to be.
I don't doubt it. I've never done anything interesting or remarkable in my life. Dreamer. This is it. I see my friends shriveling up over the years. Dreamer. Sorry.
Nancy, everyone needs something different.
This is available on Hulu right now. I think it's also doing a very limited theatrical run, but most of the people are going to be able to see it on Hulu. This is a very intimate story, not just because of the subject matter, because it's about sexuality. This is a movie that is ultimately a character study between these two people. One of them is Emma Thompson, who is this widow. Emma Thompson is 63, so I'm assuming the widow is about the same age. And she's led a very sheltered life, very boring life with her husband, especially in the bedroom. And she wants to experience different things, and she wants to experience it with a younger man, somebody who's attractive. So she goes and hires the escort, and the guy whose character's name's Leo Grand, which of course is that's his escort name. And he's very good. He's very good looking. And the implication is they never throw any number values around, but the implication is he's not cheap. And first of all, the perspective of this movie, it shows the gender politics of this. A movie like this about a woman hiring an escort seems more interesting and sweet in a lot of ways. Whereas if it's a guy, no matter what his situation is beforehand, him going to a hotel and hiring a female escort, it seems a lot sleazier that way. No matter what is happening in it, it just seems a lot sleazier when it's a guy hiring a female escort versus a woman hiring a male escort. So, and a lot of it hinges all on the shoulders of Emma Thompson. First of all, can I just say for the record, 63-year-old Emma Thompson is completely desirable. Especially like the drunk Emma Thompson at the Golden Globes holding her shoes in her hand as she's trying to give a speech. That kind of Emma Thompson is sexy as all get out. I don't care how old she is. But she does play very vulnerable in this, and she gets into the character really, really well. And it's a daring role for her because it's bearing, and it put her in a very vulnerable position, not just character-wise, but as an actress. I mean, it reminds me a little bit of when Helen Mirren did Calendar Girls. When she was getting older and she still did a movie that highlighted her sexuality and her attractiveness as a woman and her sexual appeal at that age. And even though Emma Thompson's character is meant to be much more mousy than Emma Thompson comes across as, she does a great job becoming that character. And the guy who plays Leo Grand does a good job too, but it's not his movie. It's more her movie. It's her having to open her eyes and trying different things and figuring about what she missed and what she can't go back and get and what she can sort of assimilate later in life through a situation like this. And it's less about sex. I mean, yeah, there's sex in there and there's a lot of bedroom talk and there's a lot, and there's a little, actually not much, but there's a little bit of, entanglement scenes, we'll say. But really, most of it is these two characters talking. I mean, it almost could be a stage play, really. It's about, I think, four different encounters they have at this hotel. And it shows her naivete. It shows her prejudice that she brings to the table. It shows the barriers that this escort puts up for himself, not just for his safety, but for his own emotional well-being, and the barriers he puts together in order to protect himself doing this job. And it is something to watch because generationally, people who are that age and older, I mean, you're talking like boomers. Let's just say there is a disconnect between the younger generation now. I'm going to take my own generation out of it. I'm a Generation X, but you talk like millennials and Generation Z. Their view of sexuality and what is appropriate bedroom, not just behavior, but activities, we'll say, is vastly different. I mean, there are things I won't go into details, but there's conversation I had with my father about certain sexual things that, not that he was a prude, but it was like that you didn't even consider certain things because it was just, that was just outside the level of norm. And I think that this does kind of open that up, and it puts a spotlight on it. And you can use that as a microcosm for the grand fights that are happening between boomers and millennials, or boomers and Gen Z. I mean, it's amazing how much boomers and millennials and Gen Z fight like cats and dogs. And this movie is a great little microcosm of why that is happening. But it's a wonderful movie to watch if you're a big fan of Emma Thompson. You know, it's not as taboo as you think, but it's more of that character study with a fantastic vulnerable performance by Emma Thompson. I'm going to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. As much as I wanted to cover Morbius, because Morbius is out on DVD and Blu-ray and 4K right now, I wanted to talk about a good vampire story. Because as much as I have fun making fun of Morbius and it's Morbin time, I still want to talk about something that's worth watching. And let's talk about Salem's Lot. Rob Lowe stars in this TNT miniseries based on Stephen King's bestseller about a vampire who decimates a small Maine town.
I used to think nothing happened here. The truth is, everything happens here.
When do we meet your partner?
In his own good time.
I saw a plastic bag in the back seat.
Was it little boy size?
It was head size.
What about the house?
It scares me even to this day.
Susan!
Life is such a precious gift.
I don't know how to stop it.
Let me in, Daddy.
What's happening to this town?
I happen to like it here.
About a month ago, I talked about the 1979 version of Salem's Lot, which was also a TV miniseries. It was a two-night movie from back in 1979. This one was made, 25 years later? In 2004. And like I said, when I talked about the original miniseries, I was disappointed with it when I originally saw it. I didn't think they did a very good adaptation of Salem's Lot, which is one of my favorite Stephen King books. And I never watched the Salem's Lot version in 2004. I don't know why, because it was on my radar and I had TNT at the time. I don't know why I didn't watch it. But I finally got around to watching. What had happened was I wanted to watch The Shining, not the Stanley Kubrick movie, but the miniseries that they had made for, I think, ABC back in the late 90s. And I found it as a box set between that and the original It from TV with Tim Curry and then the Salem's Lot miniseries. And so I watched The Shining. Maybe I'll talk about that one in the months to come. But then I had Salem's Lot, so I decided after I watched the 79 version, I thought I'd watch this one and compare it. And, I mean, it's got more bite than the previous version, but it still suffers from all the trappings of the TV movie limitations of its era. I mean, for a movie like this, it's very violent. If you read the book, it's very violent and dark and not overly sexual, although there do have those moments. But it is bloody and it's gory because it's a vampire movie. And there's only so much you could get away with back in 2004. That's why I'm looking forward to the remake that's coming later this year. But I think if you're going to do a TV version of it, I mean, why not do something on Netflix? I would love to see what they would have come up with for the long form version for Netflix, because it is the darkest version of our town that Stephen King had put together. Now, I think Rob Lowe does a good job. Donald Sutherland chooses the scenery a little more than James Mazin did as the familiar of the vampire. One of the best parts about it is you've got Rutger Hauer playing Barlow, who's the vampire, and he is he's much more animated and he talks and he's the character that was in the original book versus just the voiceless villain that was in the 1979 version. So I think this is a little bit more cohesively done. But the biggest problem is it's still fighting with commercial breaks. And it was on basic cable. It was on TNT. So you still had to deal with censors. And so it's imperfect. I will say that. It's about at the same level as the 1979 version. I think there's certain things that each one gets better than the other. But it's not the ultimate version of Salem's Lot that I originally want. But I'm still going to say, it kind of rocks. It's worth checking out if you're a fan.
It kind of rocks.
Also available on disc, like I mentioned, Morbius, but also Father Stu's available now on disc. On VOD, we've got Downton Abbey, A New Era, Firestarter through regular VOD outside of Peacock, and Fatherhood, which is a Netflix movie, which is now available on VOD. And then on Prime, we've now got No Time to Die available if you want to stream that. And that wraps up the Home Cinema Roundup. Next week, I'm going to be talking about The Black Phone and Elvis. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.